dynamic voices for a diverse church. This is Pass the Mic.
Well, greetings and God bless. Welcome to another episode of Pass the Mic, Dynamic Voices for a Diverse Church, powered by The Witness, a Black Christian collective. I am your host, Tyler Burns. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at BurnsClan. Please follow at your own risk. And as you can probably hear, I am not in a traditional studio because PTM is on the move this week. We are on location. And the truth of the matter is, we are typically on the move multiple weeks. We just make time for you because we care about you. Dr. Tisby is off changing the world. I am trying to teach and preach and speak. And I'm actually, don't tell anybody, but I'm actually on location at the site of the Joy and Justice Conference 2024. I'm literally on location right now getting ready to record a promo video. I stopped what I was doing to literally come over to my phone and record a voice memo. And it's not going to be great audio and Bo's going to roll his eyes at me. But I'm so excited to bring this particular conversation to you and to also leak to you that we are having a Joy and Justice 2024. Okay, you'll have to wait a couple of weeks to hear more about that. But buckle up. It's going to be absolutely incredible. And if you loved Joy and Justice Conference 2023, I believe you will also love Joy and Justice Conference 2024. But back to today's episode, I had the unique privilege of having a conversation with a brilliant Black woman director who is pioneering and trailblazing in this concept of what it means to tell Black stories. I've been watching this series on Apple TV Plus called Masters of the Air. And I was watching this series on basically the Air Force in World War II, simply because I saw in the trailer a glimpse of the Tuskegee Airmen. And I've always been fascinated with the story of the Tuskegee Airmen. And so I wanted to see how they were going to tell this story. Well, I had to wait about 7 or 8 episodes to get to that out of the 9 episodes of this particular season. So I had to wait a while to get to that. But it did not disappoint. And in the mix, someone reached out and said, hey, would you like to have a conversation with the director of these episodes? I said, who's the director of these episodes? And that is none other than the incredible Dee Reese. And if you're OG PTM, if you are a day one PTM listener, then you know that I'm a big fan of Dee Reese's work. I specifically mentioned her in one of our cultural artifacts for her movie Mudbound. And she is fascinated with telling the story of World War II survivors and World War II soldiers as they try to assimilate back into American life, but also telling their story. So it was shocking to me to hear that she was actually directing this particular perspective and this particular story. So I am blown away by that. And I said, you know what? I really want to have this conversation with Dee Reese and see if she can give us some insights on what it means to tell Black stories as a part of the broader Black story. So I know this isn't necessarily our typical, but buckle up. I think she gives some great insights. And especially if you've watched the show, you will be particularly interested in this. Now, next week, as we kind of close everything down as we head into Easter. So those of us who are part of church, we know it's getting to that time. Resurrection Sunday is coming. Easter Sunday is coming. We're excited about it. We'll have some a little bit more churchy for you, I promise. But today, buckle up for this conversation with Dee Reese. She is an incredible director. This will be an enjoyable conversation for you if you like what it means to tell stories. So I'll see you next week, y'all. Again, I'm going to get back to the shoot. Joy and Justice 2024 is coming. But that's another story, another podcast for another day. Listen to this conversation now with director Dee Reese. Hey, everybody, this is Tyler.
This is Dr. Jamar Tisby.
And we are excited that you're listening to this episode of Pass the Mic. But let me encourage you to support us. You can do so by going to patreon.com/pass the mic. And for just $1 an episode.
Just a dollar?
Now, that's the bare minimum. That's 4 quarters. But if you want to go higher,
okay, 5, you can go
10,
higher.
15, that's 20, right. 25, whatever it is, that will keep this show going and keep the high quality that hopefully you enjoy. So thank you for listening, but you can take it to the next level.
patreon.com/pass the mic. We appreciate you. Hey folks, Dr. Jamar Tisby here, and I want to make sure that you know about the Justice Takes Sides brand. This is merchandise, this is apparel to help you represent your values. This is about getting people off the sidelines and into the struggle for justice that's ongoing today. Go visit justicetakesides.com, get your merchandise and apparel there, and follow us on Instagram at Justice Takes Sides.
Well, Dee Reese, thank you so much for joining us here on Pass the Mic. How are you doing today?
I'm good. Hanging in.
Well, I have to admit something to you. This is going to kind of be the elephant in the room here. I was watching Masters of the Air before I found out you were actually directing two of the episodes. And I have to be honest with you that as soon as I found out you were directing two of the episodes, I kind of had an audible, really? I was like, really? This is interesting. So can you tell us how you got connected to this project?
Yeah, sure. I've been interested in World War II for a while, as you know, from Mudbound. You know, this is not a topic that I'm new to. And I'm interested in exploring the kind of exploits of soldiers and especially Black soldiers and how they, you know, are able to fight abroad and also fight the battle at home. So, yeah, Cary Fukunaga gave me a call and invited me on. And it was a great group of filmmakers coming together with Ryan and Anna, Tim Van Patten. So it's a cool group of filmmakers to be in community with. I know they're going to have a cinematic approach to it. So.
We often hear at the podcast talk about telling our stories, and we specifically talk about telling Black stories. And this is fascinating because it's kind of continuing in this tradition of telling a story within other stories. So I'm watching, seeing this amazing title sequence, and you see the Tuskegee Airmen in the title sequence in the episodes leading up to the episodes where they're featured. And I'm asking the question, where are they? Right. So how did you approach telling their story in the middle of a broader story where they weren't really mentioned or featured until, you know, the end of the season?
Yeah, I think a lot of the outline was laid out before. And when I came on board, you know, I wanted to integrate them. And, you know, it's the cool part of it is that, you know, these are the men that turn the tide of the battle, you know, and, you know, they certainly could have been introduced like sooner, but work within the framework that was there. I did my best to blow them out and make them, you know, felt and make them seen and establish that these two are masters of the air.
And I love that because you can tell very early on in the episode where they start to be featured that they are different and that they are very important and consequential. Even if you don't know the history, even if you're not familiar with that, you would get that feeling, you would get that understanding. But before we get to that, you directed an episode, episode 7, where they're not really mentioned or featured. What was it like telling the story specifically of Buck and Bucky in the middle of that broader conflict? How did you approach that? And what were you trying to convey, especially in a moment where they're in captivity?
You know, the overall theme was about, you know, them being grounded. In some episodes, you know, these men who have been seen in other episodes are who are, you know, flying and heroic. In my episodes, they're kind of separated from their machines. So that's interesting getting into like, okay, who are the men without the machines, without the gear, without the kind of, you know, trappings, you know, of war? Like, who are they really? And they're really forced to examine this friendship. They're forced to examine who they are. And then, you know, in this kind of like helpless state, like how they're able to find agency. And at the end of the day, the Tuskegee Airmen are the ones that are able to help them, you know, escape and are the ones that, you know, are key to their kind of getting freed. So, so it was kind of a good lead in to the episode where the Tuskegee Airmen appear because it's thought to be impossible to come to the south of France. And the thing that enables the forces to kind of take that front are the Tuskegee Airmen, the 99th Fighting Squadron.
Absolutely. And there is the obvious moment in episode 8 where they're introduced into the prison camp and there's that tinge of, well, what are they doing here? We have to share time with them. How did you approach, because the show touches on slightly those moments of cultural discourse, but it's not really necessarily featured at the center of the show and at the center of what it's trying to convey. So what was your approach in kind of communicating the brass tacks reality of these men are going to face racism, they're going to face being marginalized, they're going to face suspicion, in the middle of a show that's not really necessarily trying to make a big statement about that, it doesn't seem, but is more so just trying to tell history as it was. How did you approach that?
Well, in writing the episode, I just wanted it to be like real, you know, and the reality would be like this would be the first Black person that these men would have come into contact with or be in proximity to, you know, or even realize they're working in collaboration with, you know. And so there's not going to be this like acceptance. There's not going to be, you know, these men are still going to have, let's say myopic mindsets, you know, and they're not going to like embrace them fully. So I wanted that to be apparent, you know, there's kind of like incredulousness, this kind of like, you know, fear, this kind of like repulsion, you know, but that, you know, I wanted my soldiers, Macon and Jefferson, to still like stand strong and to kind of like assert themselves. Like they're not just Black men, they're pilots, you know, and so when they come in, they're given their name, they're given their rank, like, you know, here's who we are, you know, and often, you know, we know like from the history, from reading transcripts that, you know, the Tuskegee Airmen were often more educated, you know, the 99th Fighting Squadron, they had gone to college. They were older, you know, than the men who would be in these other squadrons. So just kind of getting at the irony that they were more educated, you know, more, prepared in certain ways and like wanting to get into the fight and being held out of the fight, you know, and when they finally get in, this kind of like disconnect, you know, and, you know, I think one of the things that we see is that, especially like an interrogation sequence, I wanted to get at the fact that the Germans knew more about these pilots than their own kind of like, you know, squadrons did, that their own collaborators did, you know? And so the irony that the Nazis would have more information, you know, about the Black soldiers than their colleagues would. And hopefully kind of planting the seed for like, you know, if America's going to win, that attitude has to change. And I think that still holds true today. Like if America is going to succeed, like that kind of wall has to be broken down. That attitude has to change. And, you know, we have to be honest about everybody's contribution to how we got here.
That's so good. We're here again with Dee Reese and we're talking about Masters of the Air, which she directed 2 episodes in. It was fascinating. And I'm sure this was obvious, but you know, you talked about the grounding and it was fascinating to kind of think about the contrast of, in America at that time, the Black soldiers would have been facing subjugation and overt oppression and racism. They would have essentially been under siege, and the white soldiers would have been walking in freedom. And it's kind of like it in episode 8, that's reversed, right? So you have the white soldiers are under siege, the main characters, and then the Black soldiers are free. And in that contrast, you see the Black soldiers wrestling with their place, and you see them wrestling with their own acceptance of who they are, their own celebration. And so you see people like Jefferson and Macon kind of wrestling with, we want more. We want to be involved more. We want to be consequential in this war. We want to be consequential in this battle. How are you portraying their longing? What's going into you portraying their longing? Because I find that that's kind of a deeper longing of all of us who have Black stories, trying to make sure that we contribute and have something that is valuable, something that is us. But even if we're not, even if we say, oh, it doesn't matter if they accept us, we do in many ways want to be accepted and valued in our given spheres and industries. So how are you portraying that longing? Because I think that was really a fascinating part of being introduced to Macon and Jefferson specifically.
Yeah, well, I mean, we see it like in the kind of bar scene, you know, where we're talking about the mission count. You know, we're starting out with like 500, you know, like talking about the missions these men have flown, you know, as contrast with like, you know, the plot line in the other episode where it's like, oh, we do 20 missions, we get to go home, you know, yes, and these men, you yes. know, are flying like double that mission count, triple that mission count. You know, they're not even thinking about going home, you know, they want to fly more. So just in that way, I'm showing like, here's their mission count, you know, and here's the reality of their, you know, existence as military men. And also, you know, when Benjamin O. Davis kind of like remarks that, hey, like, why are we, you know, like there's too many privates, too many corporals, like why are there not, you know, more kind of majors, you know? But and so in that way, getting at the fact that they're like underranked, you know, so, you know, in all those ways, I try to, you know, show the reality of the soldiers within the military, and that it's not this place where they're necessarily even, you know, getting their due, but they're still going above and beyond to fight this battle, you know? So they're kind of underpaid, they're underranked, but they're still like fighting harder and fighting longer and wanting more. And when they go home, they're still going to have to fight. And so the question is, you know, planted, like, are these allies that they had in the camp going to be allies to them when they get back to the States?
This is so good, because I see it very clearly, as you mentioned earlier, in the mission brief scene, as they're getting ready to be prepared to go into battle. And that scene is incredible. Macon just basically breaks down the mathematics of every part of their mission. And when you portray the Black brilliance, I think people are not going to realize how brilliant these men actually were, how gifted they actually were. They're gonna, some people will think, oh, that's just a Hollywood dramatization. Can you convey just how brilliant these men are and were in real life? Because I think that's something that we don't feature and center much in the history of talking about these Tuskegee Airmen.
Yeah, I would encourage people to kind of read. There's like transcripts available of the Tuskegee Airmen who talk about their experience. I would, you know, urge people to go to the transcripts. But yeah, but, you know, Macon was a mathematician, you know what I mean? And so just the idea that, you know, he was like, you know, just this brilliant guy, you know, who could then also then like fly a plane, you know, and that it's all math in a way. And that Jefferson, like all these guys, you know, had professional training to be something else, which I also brought out. And, you know, he was like, you know, he could have been a chemical engineer, like which I brought out in the interrogation scene where, you know, the Nazi kind of teases him, like, yeah, well, like when you get back home, maybe they'll let you be a janitor, you know. So just kind of showing this kind of overqualified, overtrained. But I think the history is there. If you go to the transcripts, there is a project, I'm blanking on the name of it, but that kind of sits with them, and you can read the accounts of Richard E. Macon and Alexander Jefferson like firsthand. And that for me was a primary source, because you could hear them in their own words, just even in the way they spoke. You know that these were college educated men, you know,
yes,
who had, you know, kind of been working longer and had experienced a lot of racism in the boot camps before they even came overseas. So all that was still there, just in terms of using access in the same facilities. And
you know, and I love the end of that scene, because there's this like explosion from, I believe it's Davis, who basically says, are we Tuskegee men or what? You know, there's that explosion scene of pride in the middle of them considering this is a very dangerous mission. This is a mission that likely many of us won't come back for. This is a mission that the math doesn't make sense, but we're going to still do it anyway. That level of triumph kind of bursts and exploded. I think it's actually for me, as someone who's watched the rest of the season, perhaps the most powerful moment in the entire show, or at least top three most powerful moments in the entire show. So I want to commend you and applaud you for that. But I also want to ask, in that moment of pride and in that moment of admiration and in that moment of love, what does it feel like for the actors? And what does it feel like for those who are portraying these characters? Because it feels like they channeled something different to get into that space of pride and get into that space of honoring those who have come before.
Yeah, I think there's like a defiance in it, you know, a defiance in the characters and like a defiance in the storytelling. Like, we don't have what we need, but we're going to do it anyway, you know. And then, you know, knowing that we had, you know, limited time in the episode, like, we're going to get it done anyway. Like, we're going to tell the story, you know? And so I think
That's
there's
so
that, that kind of defiance that I want to like come through, and that, you know, it's okay. You know, we're, you know, this kind of like, I think defiance is a word that most comes to mind, that, you know, that captures the spirit of the airman and that captures the spirit of, you know, the storytelling.
So just a couple of more questions before we close out. Masters of the Air is talking about this broader story of World War II and the airmen who turned the tide of the war. And you're telling stories. You're not just telling our stories. You're telling the story of this country, the story of the military, and the story of those who made sacrifices. What do you think of that this show is trying to specifically say about how we remember history? Because there's such a big debate about history now. What do you think that as you reapproach the history to prepare for this, what do you think that this can say to those of us who are reckoning with our history and to a country that is wrestling with how much of the history do we really tell? And in what way, who gets to rewrite and explain history? What do you think we can glean from a show like this?
I can't speak for everyone, but for myself, I'll just say, I think that in writing and working on this show, the thing I learned is that, you know, in retrospect and looking back, you know, we can lionize people and see them as like heroes, but it's hard to see kind of them as like humans, you know, and to see their fear and to see their vulnerabilities. And so I think in looking at history, I think it's just remembering that, you know, even the people become boldface names. In that time, they didn't feel bold-faced, you know? In that time, they just felt like a person who's trying to get back to a husband, to a wife, to a child, to a brother, to a sister, you know? And so I think it's just kind of keeping the human aspect of history. And, like, we see how the story unfolded. Like, we see, like, the long tail of it. But in that moment, I think people, all they can see is, like, the immediate, like, survival of, like, the moment. And so, you know, it makes even more extraordinary the decisions that they are able to make, not being able to see the bigger picture or being able to see the bigger context. So I think, you know, as we look back, you know, not just looking back at the big picture, but look back and zoom in on the small individuals, zoom in on the different kind of like, you know, trying to place ourselves where.
Yeah.
In this place of like where we can experience the overwhelm, where we can experience the kind of uncertainty when people make decisions, good or bad, you know.
I think the final question I would ask is, how were you portraying the brutality of the war? Because it felt different than other portrayals of World War II that I've seen. Definitely brutal, definitely visceral, definitely at times gory, but it didn't feel gory for the sake of gore, especially in your episodes. It felt like it was showing realistic portrayal of what happened, but not necessarily overdoing the violence of it. Does that make sense? Is that something that was intentional, or was it just, hey, we're going to portray it as it was or as it is?
Well, for example, like when we have Maloui's Rough Return, right? So it's a sequence where they lost most of the planes that went out, you know? And so every plane that's coming and is coming in damaged. A lot of the men are coming in hurt. I think it's to show the permanence of that kind of injury, you know? It's not just like, you know, people, you know, get hurt and go away. You still have to contend with like the literally like the viscera of them, you know? And so, for example, like in the pilot that ends that sequence, I wanted to shoot that as if it was a child's birth. See this guy coming out of the plane upside down and bloody. And like his like, you know, cords are like the umbilical cord, you know? So I wanted to show that, you know, this person's gonna be a new person. He's now born into a different world, you know? And so just thinking of like that, or there's a guy who like freezes up and like can't move, you know? I wanna show like the mental kind of toll, you know? And so it's just showing that, you know, the thing that I was struck by in going inside those planes, like these are huge metal planes and like, they're very kind of like, you know, there's no soft kind of, there's no soft place to be. And so you're putting the very fragile human body, many fragile human bodies into this piece of metal. And it seems impossible, you know, in the fighter planes also, it seems like impossible that you're putting like a small piece of flesh into this giant metal thing and that, you know, they're going to come out whole. So I just wanted to really get into the humanity of it and the permanence of scars, the permanence of damage, the permanence of injury and like how that's going to like, you know, follow them the rest of their lives.
Well, Dee Reese, thank you so much. That just absolutely blew my mind. Thank you so much for spending some time with us here on Pass the Mic. Your decisions, your brilliance, everything in the episodes that you directed was inspiring to me, and I know it will be inspiring to many others. So kudos and congratulations to you.
Thanks so much for watching. Thanks.